phone, we have my favorite person ever in the movies, all about the movies, knows everything about the movies, Mr. Paul Preston. How are you, Paul?
Doing pretty good. I just got back from a trip to Northern California, Napa. Went to the Coppola Winery because I don't drink, but I love movies. So that was great. And up there I saw something. I don't know if you've ever come across this on the internet. Right in the heart of Napa is a building, and I went by too fast to take a photo, but it stuck in my memory. Steve Silva Plumbing.
Are you kidding?
No way.
Now, is that where he moved? Or did he move elsewhere, right?
So. Yeah, yeah. Wow. Oh, I wish you did take a picture of that because we could send it to him.
I know, but I searched it, and it came right up. So, Steve Silva, if you want to.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah, we'll have to do that.
Give people an update on Steve. You can make that up.
And send that to him, yeah. So he moved from, he went from here to Utah, up to Napa Valley, and now he's doing his own plumbing.
Yeah, I was just driving along a freeway, minding my own business, and I came across Petaluma. And I don't know if you know what was shot in Petaluma, but a little something called American Graffiti. Mm-hmm. So it was like, pull over! Had to go over and find out, look at all the locations where they shot that movie, and they're all right close to one another.
Oh, very cool.
And so that was a ton of fun, too. And you can go at night, and that's actually better because that's when the movie takes place.
Like, so nighttime,
like, all
yeah.
the places look like, well, I mean, they look exactly like they did, but it was pretty cool to see all those locations from a movie. You know, me and movie locations, I love that kind of crap.
Oh, yeah, so. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. All right, Paul, so tell us what's out there that we need to go see, buddy.
Well, first of all, you know, we didn't get to talk about this. You know, a little time has passed, but we should note the passing of Ray Liotta.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you wanted to talk about this before when I was going to be on it. It never came up that I was on, and so I never got to have
it. Yeah, we had problems at the Strawberry Festival. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, the three great Ray Liotta movies you should see, and they are Goodfellas. I think that's, there's no doubt on that. Beatles, mm-hmm. the greatest rock band in history. Goodfellas is the best Ray Liotta movie. Right?
Yep.
Field of Dreams.
Mm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and a cop movie by Joe Carnahan, who tends to make tough-as-nails cop dramas, called Narc with Jason Patrick, which you should definitely get out there and see.
I think I've seen that one.
Oh, well, there you go. You have your homework.
All right.
Then, of course, Copland. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's great in a movie for last year called No Sudden Move, a Soderbergh film, a Marriage Story. He showed it. He was the last thing he expected to be in, but he was good in that. And I also recommend seeking out a little-known Harrison Ford movie called Crossing Over about a bunch of stories that intersect about the border between U.S. and Mexico. And
oh, wow.
He's in that as well.
Now, Copland, is that the one that was also with Sylvester Stallone?
Yeah.
Copland is, yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't know
Copland is stacked. De Niro, I think, too. Keitel.
Mm-hmm.
Leo is like
I forgot Ray Liotta was in that.
Yes, Stallone. They're all really good in it.
Yeah. Wow. I got to go back and visit Copland then. Yeah, well, he's definitely going to be missed, you know, that's for sure. I mean, there was no doubt he was a wonderful actor, you know, and when he delivered, he definitely delivered, you know, in all of those roles. And I think what was nice about him is that each of those roles, I think, was diverse enough to separate him from the other roles, so to speak. He didn't get pigeonholed too much, I think, as far as the way the roles went.
Yeah, you knew he could deliver when you need him in a certain type of role. Like, I didn't get to see the Many Saints of Newark, that Sopranos film, but I know he's cast in that. When I heard he was, I'm like, well, of course he is. Mm. That's perfect. Like, he should be in some kind of Sopranos story somewhere.
Right.
So I want to see that. And the good news is he had such a prolific career that we all probably have a lot. Like, you got to go see Narc. I guess I still have to see Something Wild, the movie that kind of put him on the map years ago, a Jonathan Demme film from the mid-80s, where he steals a show from Jeff Daniels and Melanie Griffith, apparently. I've seen clips of that movie, but not the whole thing. I got to go back and watch that. So, yeah, there's a lot to check out. I think he's in Smoke and Aces. I never saw that. You know, so there's stuff to see about him, and it'd be worth checking out because he was great.
Yeah,
and
he now, was.
You know, he's gone.
Absolutely.
It's a shame.
All right, my friend. So, again, what should we go see?
Well, refusing to go, Tom Cruise, never stopping, never relenting, and sure enough now, Top Gun Maverick is his biggest movie ever. It's already made $200 million more than his biggest movie to date. So now worldwide at $918 million. I mean, Top Gun Maverick is the movie of the summer, the movie of the, I mean, the post-pandemic movie outside of maybe Spider-Man. That, you know, those are like the two biggest movies since the movies opened back up, and and for a good reason, man. This movie is absolutely fantastic, better than the original, if you ask me. Basically, because the plot is so much more than the original. The original Top Gun was, you know, hot shots fly and crack wise, and then there's a tragedy. Does he get over it? Yes, and then there's a big shoot 'em up, and we're done. There's a lot more going on in Top Gun Maverick. You know, Pete Mitchell is asked to return to service at Top Gun. He thinks he's going to fly, but he actually has to teach these recruits. We find out the mission is extremely dangerous. One of the recruits is Goose's son, and then there's a love interest, and all this stuff. Of course, he's always at odds with his higher ups, and John Hamm is perfect in the role of like a, you know, a straight-laced stooge who's got to, you know, think he's in charge all the time when we know he's not. Maverick's in charge. And I tell you, there's a scene with Maverick and Iceman that is the scene to beat for the year. I mean, if there's a scene in a movie better than that scene, I'll be shocked because it's exceptionally well played. It's very well acted. The whole film is just paced very, very well. The fact that it can slow down from all its you know, aerial antics long enough to have that beautiful scene between those two guys with such history, and the meta aspect of Pete Maverick Mitchell being told, let go, you know, is just deep, man. And I just thought the movie was fantastic. And of course, as you would imagine, the extraordinary aerial fights are advanced as 36 years should allow them to advance in film technology. So I mean, I watched the other Top Gun, the first one, recently on a plane because I knew this one was coming on a plane. And it, you know, back in the 80s, I always thought that was one of the lightweight Cruise efforts. You know, you had Days of Thunder, Top Gun, and Cocktail is kind of like, ah, this is Tom Cruise for the masses. I'm more the Color of Money, Rain Man, Born on the 4th of July. You know, those are more my type of things for Tom Cruise. But I thought Top Gun was all flash, no substance. But looking back now in the rear view at Top Gun, I mean, Michael Bay makes Tony Scott look like, you know, David Lean, or, you know, it looks like now Top Gun doesn't look that flashy at all.
And that volleyball scene still looks gay.
The story, and it just proves that for 36 years, Tom Cruise is the last great movie star. And so you should go check him out in theater while you got the chance, if you have not yet. And I highly recommend IMAX because picture and sound are absolutely dominating. And exceptionally well played, and I'm sure they poured over the sound in the 2 years while we waited for this to come out.
Paul, with this movie, do you need to see the original Top Gun, or does this movie stand on its own and you can still understand everything?
Yeah, you kind of don't. I think that's, I mean, they figure 36 years. if you saw it even, you may not remember it. So I think they do a good job of flashback cuts, you know, the moments of remembrance that Maverick has. They don't linger on old clips from the old movie too long, but they do it early, get it out of the way, and then you can get on with it. And the recruits have to learn who Rooster is. Rooster is the character played by Miles Teller, who's good again in this. And he so he's Goose's son. And so when they learn that he's Goose's son, oh yeah, and Goose was Maverick's partner, and oh yeah, Maverick was kind of like felt all this remorse for Goose's death. So they put that all together for you. So you get to remind yourself, or if you've never seen it, you kind of are in the shoes of the recruits who
and you understand what the heck is going on.
So they play that out very smart. The movie's just super smart. For what could have been just a big noisy, you know, action movie, it's there's a lot more going on and a lot more asked of the cast and crew to keep it smart and sharp, and also just top to bottom entertaining.
All right, Paul, we got 4 more minutes. What else should we go see, buddy?
The Black Phone. The Black Phone just opened up. It's from the director of Sinister, Scott Derrickson, who made Doctor Strange and now has come back to horror films. More of a horror thriller, really. Ethan Hawke, who was in Sinister, pairs up with him again.
Oh, I love Ethan Hawke.
Child murderer dubbed the Grabber. Now, this is like rough territory to even venture into, you know, today. It's like, here's a story of a child killer. And he's punched this sort of ugly hole in a quaint 70s town that has Little League and all these things, you know. And then the posters are going up. The kids are missing, and they're not finding them. And there's a young kid named Finney, who's eventually grabbed and put in the soundproof room with a bed and a phone and just a few other items. And then the phone, which is unplugged from the wall, which is a cord, you know, that has been cut, rings. Now, you have to buy into the premise of this movie, and you're in for a super effective thriller. Ethan Hawke, great, as you'd expect. There may be no more sure thing actor for the last 30 years or whatever role you put him in. He was just great in Moon Knight. He's great again because he's terrifying. He's kind of unstable.
Yeah.
And yet he's and he's not like a complete freak. Like, you kind of talk to him. The young kids can talk to him, but that is always uncomfortable. So he's great in that part. But the kids are the real story of this movie. Mason Thames, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, or my Thames, I'm not sure, and Madeline McGraw, they play brother and sister. This is like the 70s where the teachers are checked out. There's no adults anywhere when the bullies start to beat up the kids. The dads are alcoholic and abusive, so it's really the kids having to fend them for themselves in this whole world. You know, the kid actually says when the brother and sister leave school, the sister goes, I'm going to stay at a friend's house, and the boy says, I'm going to go like watch dad, I think is what he says, because wow. Dad's a mess. He just sits and drinks. And so when Finney gets grabbed and put in the soundproof room, it's even up to the kids who've been previously kidnapped to help him through these phone calls that come through the phone. So there's like a supernatural element to this too. Plus Finney's sister is clairvoyant and she has clues as to how they could save him. And it all adds up to like really good suspense and, real stakes, and again, all this in really risky territory for just like child murders. I mean, it's heavy, it's dark, but it's good, man. Wow. If you just want to like grab the sides of your chair and scream out at some stuff, and I mean, yeah, it's very well done. They don't deflate any real tension with stupid humor, you know, or something dumb. It's played for terror, delivers in that respect, and it's a good movie.
All righty. And last one, Paul.
What's that?
And you have one more?
Well, I can say, I saw that instead of Elvis, so I'll have to get back to you on what I think of Elvis, but Baz Luhrmann just kind of drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to see if I enjoy that or not. I'll tell you two quick things. There's a movie called The Phantom of the Open, which is a British movie about the world's worst golfer to ever play the British Open. It's really a movie about following your dreams. The idea it's never too late to start. This guy loses his job as a crane operator, or sees it on the horizon ending. He's in his mid-40s. He spent his whole life raising his family. He's like, I'd like to be in the British Open. And so he gets in by a fluke, and he's terrible. But it becomes a huge hit because he's terrible. And there's just British charm all over the place in this movie. Mark Rylance is your lead actor. He underplays his role wonderfully. And there's just kind of one of those folksy British movies like The Full Monty or Waking the Divine or Calendar Nerds.
Oh, cool. Okay.
That is enjoyable beginning to end. Totally great. So watch that. It's hard to find in the theaters, but I found it in a matinee in Encino. You know, so you'll have to search. But you know, soon enough, it'll be on some kind of VOD, and I highly recommend checking that out. The Phantom of the Open, and he's the real person, and he's like this—he's this British icon because of it. Just wasn't going to say no to the people who wouldn't let him play in the British Open, and he faked his way in a number of times. It's hilarious. And,
wow!
But the family story is totally heartwarming and beautiful, with Sally Hawkins and other good actors in there as well. What I'd recommend you skip: everything that was right about Top Gun is wrong with Jurassic World Dominion. All right, good night, everybody.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah.
Oh, man, I was looking forward to go seeing that too.
Well, it mainly fails to deliver on the promise of the end of Fallen Kingdom.
Uh-huh.
I mean, at the end of that movie, you got a dinosaur on the verge of the suburbs. They were like, oh, it's about to go down. And then you get into it, and there's a story of like a tech genius who's manufacturing insects to wreck crops, and who cares? Dinosaurs are running nuts. You know, they got to deal with that. I mean, there's a scene where Claire and Owen like put in earpieces to infiltrate a dino black market, and it's like, movie, you have lost me. But this is, why do they have to do Jason Bourne stuff? The score, the villains who like pose, they're like bad guy posers, like, yeah, you know, they make these sort of posy actions and look all pouty and stuff. I'm like, this is not the content you would find in a Jurassic World or Jurassic Park movie. Right. I think the whole Jurassic World trilogy is like failed in comparison to the original. But but I thought J.A. Bayona, who directed The Impossible and directed Monster Calls, did a lot with Fallen Kingdom. A lot of new stuff. The volcano, the dino auction, the dinosaurs, like the haunted house with dinosaurs in it, which is eventually what the mansion became at the end of that movie. A lot of new and interesting stuff. But the promise that delivered, the original director of Jurassic World, which I thought was a lot of just sort of mimicry of the original, comes back and kind of adds his hackiness to this one. So skip that. Man. Go see. I saw Top Gun Maverick twice. I recommend you do that before you see Jurassic World Dominion once. Okay. Or check out The Black Phone or The Phantom of the Open. I gave you three good things.
All right. Sounds good.
And Sean, don't get me started on Obi-Wan Kenobi. Okay.
You know what? Hey, we were talking about it yesterday, and I mean, I've got a love hate with it as well. You know, I thought it was good in some points, bad in other points, and everything. And yeah, you know, did the story need to be told? No, not really. But it was kind of cool, I think, to see certain things happen, though. You know, because it does tie in certain things that we see in A New Hope, though. So
people like seeing Darth Vader. People like seeing Yoda. People like seeing, but pay attention. The writing is terrible. Anyway, I don't like Star Wars on TV.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why they kind of went the way they went. Did they need to? No, not really, but it could have been a little bit better. But yeah, I agree. So, but next time we'll talk about Ms. Marvel, though.
Oh.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, that's, I know, because I know you Scott love Pilgrim. The
Marvel. Yeah, the Scott Pilgrim of Marvel movies. It's fun.
All right, brother. We'll talk to you next time, man.
Hey, they don't stop making movies, so yeah, I suggest we do it.
All right, brother. You take care.
Farewell.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
Bye.